I don't know about you, but that voice in my head will shout down any other line of thinking. And so for me, it's really not that different from what I tried with my son, which is sort of gaining perspective and not discounting that, but like trying to turn the volume down on that voice a little bit and turn the volume up on all the things that are going right. Because I think sometimes that voice whispers and gets kind of shoved out of the way. I mean, even Rhett would say before bed, I'm trying to think the good thoughts, but the bad thoughts keep pushing them out of the way. It's exactly what our inner voice does too. So when I'm having a hard day and everything seems to be going wrong and I'm focusing too much on the negative, my job for myself is the same thing I coached him through, which is yes, and what's going well. And honestly, that list is so much longer. It's just not yelling as loud. Like the list of things going right in my life, thank goodness, is always longer than the things going wrong. But the things going wrong get so much airtime.
Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms Podcast. Joining me today for her second appearance on the show is author Maggie Smith. Maggie joined me back in November to discuss her book, You Could Make This Place Beautiful, which I'll be sure to include in the show notes. But today she's here to talk about her newest children's book, My Thoughts Have Wings. She wrote this children's book in hopes that kids could rewire their thoughts and develop positive thinking habits at bedtime. So today we're going to discuss the inspiration behind her book, the importance of bedtime rituals, and strategies for managing stress and negative thoughts. Maggie also shares from her own experiences combating stress and offers simple ways to promote positivity in daily life. It's been a joy getting to know Maggie through podcasting, and I can't wait for you to hear this one. But before we get there, I quickly want to share my minimalist resource with you. My resource this week is Two Men and a Junk Truck. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Two Men and a Truck. This one specifically helps with cleanouts. If you are looking to declutter and get organized, these professional junk removal services will help with any big overhaul. Some of the bigger items they haul away are mattress removal, appliance, TVs, exercise equipment, carpet, furniture. Really, instead of going through the hassle of calling for bulk pickup, renting an ugly dumpster, you can call Two Men in a Junk Truck and they will get it done for you. I specifically want to shout out to the Columbus team. And truly, if you're looking to overhaul and declutter your house, Two Men in a Junk Truck would be a perfect way to really get the ball rolling. I want to say I'm not sponsored by this company. For those of you who have been here for a while, you know that I absolutely love to support local business, local entrepreneurs. So check out Two Men in a Junk Truck and see if they're in your area. I'll be sure to include a link in the show notes if you want to check them out. And again, if you have any questions in regards to your own personal decluttering journey, please feel free to reach out to me either at my personal page, my email, or on Instagram. I would love to help you. I would love to go deeper with you in these areas. So please don't hesitate to reach out. And with that, let's get into this conversation with Maggie Smith. Maggie, thanks again for joining me today on the Minimalist Moms Podcast.
Oh, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I always love talking to people that are local, so I was happy to have you back. Why don't you go ahead and reintroduce yourself to people that weren't listening before, and then we'll jump into our conversation and topic.
Yeah, I'm Maggie Smith. I'm primarily a poet, although I say that, and I think by this time next year, the last five books I've published are in five different genres. So I say I'm a poet. But I've been publishing a lot of things that are not poetry. And so my new book is my first book for children. I've been writing for adults for, 20 some years. And My Thoughts Have Wings is actually an illustrated picture book for little ones.
I have read it and I loved it. And it reminded me of the book, I think it's called The Rabbit Listened. Have you read that book?
No, I don't know this one.
Okay, I'll try and summarize. So this little boy is building and his blocks get knocked down and all these animals come into his room. I mean, it's his imagination, but the snake is like, let's get revenge. And the elephant's like, let's fix it. And someone's like, let's yell. They're all trying to help him with these different emotions or outlets. And then the bunny comes in at the very end. And sorry, spoiler alert, but the bunny listens. The rabbit just listens to him. He just needs to get all of his emotions out. He doesn't need just one. And your book reminded me of this too, because the little girl is having these not so great thoughts right before bedtime. And then she's given an outlet to rewire her thoughts and better habits with how she's thinking. That's how you would describe your book, right?
I would. Yeah. No, I love that. I need an elevator pitch. So I will take that. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, the book was really inspired by bedtime conversations with both of my kids, but most recently with my youngest, my son, Rhett. And he was having, this was like 2020 lockdown, school closed, can't hug your grandparents, can't go anywhere. We also had a lot of upheaval just, you know, divorce-wise happening in our house. And it was just a really tough time. And I know it seems like maybe a small hope for a book, but parents who do bedtimes know this is not a small hope. I just wanted to make a book that made tuck-ins a little calmer and sweeter for other families, because it's such a time of connection, right? You know, bedtime is such a time of connection, or can be. It's such an opportunity for connection when we've been at school or daycare or work or running around or soccer or whatever the thing is all day long. We're in different places or we're going a million miles an hour. And then when we finally get to calm down and have some like sweetness and snuggles and kind of like reflect on the day, if you're stressed or worrying or anxious, it colors the entire experience. And I definitely had, you know, more than one night when I left his room and thought, I don't think I was able to offer him what he needed in that moment. And I know as an adult who tends to ruminate, you know, I can be really preoccupied all day with emails and work and this and that and teaching. And then when I lie down in bed at night and it's quiet, my mind suddenly floods with all the stuff that I've been kind of pushing off to the margins all day. And kids are like that too. Like, we all do it. We all have that kind of moment of rumination. And so with Rhett, we came up with this little ritual, which was not discounting or denying the bad thoughts, because I don't think anybody calms down by being told calm down or stops worrying by being told don't worry. I mean, it just feels disingenuous to tell a child who has legitimate concerns, like, don't think about that. I don't like that. I like that's why I like the rabbit listening. That makes a lot of sense. And so it wasn't a matter of saying, don't think about that, let's think about this instead. But I know all this stuff is going on, and they're like, what can we focus on to help you calm down before sleep? What happened right today? What is a happy memory you have from last week or last month or last summer? What do you have to look forward to? And it became this like really lovely kind of greatest hit of memories time for us to share back and forth and kind of piggyback off of each other. And expand with sensory detail, like, oh, I remember that ice cream. And do you remember the bird in the parking lot? And oh, I remember that one day. And it worked, which is why I thought, I think this could be a book that might help other families.
Absolutely. And I know this seems maybe strange to some of my listeners that I would have a children's book. So that is a variation from what I'm usually talking about on here. But I like the idea of routines. So your bedtime routine, mindfulness, rewiring our minds to think in a more positive way. So I think this is completely applicable. And I'm just curious to know some of the simple ways that, even outside of reading to our children, that you have applied more. How have you combated stress in your own life?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think it's funny. I think we think of the strategies we use with our kids as maybe being different from the strategies we use for ourselves. And I think they don't always have to be. Like, so much of what helps me combat stress is perspective, right? It's like the sort of inner voice that talks to us about what we're doing wrong, what we're not achieving, what might happen that's bad, that worst case scenario thinker, the inner critic, that inner voice, which is the voice of anxiety, that troublemaker, is so loud. Like, I don't know about you, but like, that voice in my head will shout down any other line of thinking. And so for me, it's really not that different from what I tried with my son, which is sort of gaining perspective and not discounting that, but like trying to turn the volume down on that voice a little bit and turn the volume up on all the things that are going right. Because I think sometimes that voice whispers and gets kind of shoved out of the way. I mean, even Rhett would say before bed, I'm trying to think the good thoughts, but the bad thoughts keep pushing them out of the way. And that's exactly what our inner voice does too. So like when I'm having a hard day and everything seems to be going wrong and I'm focusing too much on the negative, my job for myself is the same thing I coached him through, which is yes, and what's going well. And so, and you usually, honestly, that list is so much longer. It's just not yelling as loud. Like the list of things going right in my life, thank goodness, is always longer than the things going wrong. But the things going wrong get so much airtime. So yeah, that gratitude practice of like switching over and being like, yes, and I have my health and my kids are here and they're thriving in school and the sun is finally out, despite the fact that in Ohio winters, it's gray almost all the time. You know, whatever that list is, just refocusing helps me.
I was trying to remember, it came to me while you were speaking of why we choose to ruminate on the negative. And I believe that I've read it is an evolutionary, regardless of people's beliefs on evolution, it is like an adaptive ability for us and our ancestors to look back at, okay, this was dangerous. I can't have that happen again because it's life or death.
Yeah.
So I need to put that in my brain and not forget it and maybe think about the lion or the drought or whatever it is. And that has evolutionarily stayed with us. I'm sure there's other science to it as well. But kind of even putting that into perspective, I think the thing that has helped me just reframing and getting the conversation started with friends or my husband, just getting it out. And I don't think you necessarily need to spew, but just getting it out of your mind and onto paper or getting that dialogue going has been so helpful for me.
Yeah.
What else has been for you?
You know, I write all the time, although I'm not really a journaler. It's kind of funny. I think when I'm writing, I'm usually thinking eventually this will become a piece that I share with others. So I keep notebooks where I take notes, but it's not a journal per se where it's really like a record of my life that's just for me. It's more of a place where I can sort of catch a thought and get it down before it flies away. But, you know, for me, a lot of it is taking walks. I feel like that's so underrated and it sounds like such a simple thing. But for me, getting up and going on a walk in my neighborhood, even if it's 20 minutes between meetings or, you know, or taking a walk with my kids and talking, like just kind of debrief on their day, I find kids open up so much more when there's movement involved and you're not looking straight at them. So like in the car or walking side by side somehow allows you to feel like less on the spot about sharing things that are on your mind. That helps me a lot. Listening to music helps me a lot. Frankly, doing anything with my hands. And I know there's neuroscience to that too, that when you're actually doing things with your hands, there's something about that that like sends a signal to you that you're doing something useful, which feels positive. So if I'm cooking or frankly, even folding laundry, there can be something kind of meditative in that for me.
I've gotten into sourdough.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a baker. I pretty much burn or destroy everything because I just am not as precise. Yes, you have to follow it step by step. And when I haven't done that, when I've tried to get creative to save myself time, I've destroyed those loaves. So it really does help bring you back to the present moment. And I don't know, you're doing that thing with your hand and you have this beautiful creation at the end. So I've really enjoyed that recently. I'm curious though, how old are your kids again?
They're now 15 and 11.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And this book you wrote maybe for like 5 to 10.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's funny. I think that the marketing age for this book, I think they're listing it as 4 to 8. But what we know about childhood anxiety is it tends to pick up from age 9 on for most kids. So I actually, you know, I'm hearing from readers already who are like, my 10-year-old says this is her favorite book, or my 11-year-old read this with me and said, it's me, which I totally get. So I think like some card games, it's for age 0 to 99, because all of us, I think, have that tendency to worry at night when things get quiet.
I mean, yeah, even reading it for myself, there were messages that I took away to be applicable to my own life. So if someone's reading this to their kiddo, I'm sure to have the same thought process. But that bedtime, especially for an 11 and 15 year old, just everything they're navigating at school is really heavy. And so I think that end of day processing, because they're thinking about, oh, I have to go back to it. If they're having some type of negative interaction at school, that's the time where they're processing, I have to go back to this. So I think if we can get in there and help guide them, it's just, it is so invaluable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the kids have, you know, what do we call them? Like the Sunday scaries.
Yeah.
I don't have those because I work from home and my day looks the same pretty much every day. So Monday to me is sort of like Saturday, which is sort of like Thursday. But I think people who know they're going back into an office or a classroom or whatever the situation is on a Monday morning, they have that end of weekend, like, oh, here we go again. And I think kids, if they're stressed out about grades or social interactions or whatever sports or whatever's going on at school, they're feeling that at night too, you know, like, here we go again. And so having time to like sit and process with them is so important. I think this book will help families of younger kids do that. And I think if you've got older kids who are like not wanting to sit with you and look at a picture book before bed, which my kids are definitely at that age now, just having talks, you know, like, hey, what was the best thing that happened today? Or like, what, you know, like what's challenging right now? What do you need to like sound off about? What can I be like? I'm not going to offer unsolicited advice and try to fix it for you. But like, if you're looking for feedback, I'm here, or I can just listen if that's more what you're in the mood for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are two more things I want to hit on before we wrap up. And one of them is, as we were figuring out what our conversation would look like, calming down, pretending you're holding a hot bowl of soup. Can you expand on this thought a little bit more?
Yeah, I just wrote about this for Oprah. Yeah, my son came home from preschool. So this has now been, I think, 7 years ago. And I was stuck in traffic and he was showing me this mindfulness technique that his preschool teacher had told him about. And I remember looking in the rearview mirror at him doing it in his little, you know, booster seat in the back seat of my car. And you basically, you know, cup your hands and pretend you're holding a hot bowl of soup and you smell the soup. So that's the deep inhale. And then you cool it down. So he kind of pursed his little lips and did that like long cooling exhale over the bowl of soup. And I remember thinking at the time, like, what a great way to teach little kids that kind of mindfulness technique of the belly breath, you know? And also, like, I'm so using this. Like, maybe right now in this traffic jam when I feel like saying unkind things to this giant SUV in front of me. So yeah, I wrote a piece about basically stealing ideas from guidance counselors and preschool teachers and using them for myself, because I think we all could use a little bit more mindfulness and a little bit more calming energy in our hectic days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have anything else you want to speak to in regards to positivity and that change of mindset in regards to being more positive and turning our thoughts in that way?
You know, it was really important for me in the book to have the child be empowered to come up with these positive thoughts on his or her own. You know, it's really a natural impulse for us as parents, and forget just as parents, even as friends, as sisters, as neighbors, as partners, to want to swoop in and like calm the other person down ourselves or try to fix their problems or say, don't think about that. Think about this, or no, don't worry about that. That's nothing. You should be thinking about this. And that doesn't actually help them the next time they feel worried, because if you are swooping in to fix it for them, that's not going to do the trick. And so it was important for me to write this book in a way that the child is coming up with their own positive thoughts, because I want it to be empowering. And so that's the one thing I would say is like, I think have to feel empowered ourselves to come up with things that help us reframe in a more positive light. And the best thing we can do for the other people in our lives is like be there with them in it and for them in it, but not try to fix it for them. Because if we're fixing it for them, they don't have the tools and strategies to then manage it on their own. I'm thinking, you know, now My son started doing this at bedtime, but he could draw on this strategy at any time of day. If he was in the middle of a school day and had a negative experience at recess or got a score on a test he wasn't happy with, he had a strategy where he could be like, yes, that happened. And I know I have this to look forward to. I know mom's making this for dinner tonight. Remember that one time when I got like an A++? Remember the one time I caught the football at recess? And so just making it empowering for them and not just.
I think that's great advice. In a way, I feel like if we get to adulthood and haven't learned those tools of self-regulation or changing our mindset, we do go to therapy, which therapy is beneficial for numerous reasons. But we go there to learn tools so that we can have that. So I think if we can get ahead of that, maybe we can give our kids these tools now. So maybe they won't need as much therapy.
Maybe not as much.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. The bedtime, again, as they are getting older, that's the time I just want to make as precious as possible and I get to hold on to. It's just that debriefing time. And so I want to make sure that if, for people that are with young babies, just understanding what an opportunity you have at that end of day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's connection central time. You know, like whether you're reading a book together or singing or just like snuggled up talking about the day or watching a favorite show together or playing a game of Uno or whatever the thing is. I mean, I treasure that. I treasure that time so much. So whatever we can do to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember my dad, we would play gin rummy together. And I always just thought that was really lovely. Even if it wasn't like a bedtime situation, that was just kind of the way that he sent me off. So
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was fun. Well, Maggie, where can listeners grab a copy of this book and connect with you online?
The book, you can find it anywhere, favorite online retailer. You can find it at your indie bookstore. If people want to order through Gramercy Books in Bexley, Ohio, I will sign and personalize them. So if you go to their website, you can put it in the notes. This is for my grandkids, my niece, my daughter, my son, and I will write their little name in the book for them. So I always like to plug my local indie because I can just walk up and sign some books for your favorite little people. And then they'll have their name in a book, which always feels special.
Yeah. Shout out to Gramercy Books, because if you live in Columbus and haven't been there, it is lovely. Go next door to Kitty's, who also owned by a lovely couple. Amazing.
Yep.
Egg sandwiches. I just love that little pair of shops together.
Same. Yeah.
Well, Maggie, as we end the show, I always ask my guests two questions, and I think I did ask you last time, or maybe we didn't. Did I ask you two questions last time?
I think you probably did. I'm not prepared, but I'm just going to wing it because that's what we do.
Yeah, I didn't want you to be prepared. I like to catch people off guard. So the first one is, what's been a beneficial resource in your life that you want to share with the listeners?
Ooh, this I actually know because I've just been reading this book, and actually it kind of plays on what we've been talking about. I don't know if you know this one. It's Dr. Aliza Pressman's The 5 Principles of Parenting. And it just came out a few weeks ago, so I'm working my way through it. But she is a developmental psychologist.
Okay.
And is like so kind and wise. And it all seems like incredibly helpful and also like, yes, of course, advice. Like, just feels intuitively right. And it's incredibly reassuring. Parenting book. So that's a resource I would share.
Okay, I'll have to look that one up. I'll include it in the show notes as well. And then the last one is, what is something that you can't stop talking about?
What is something right now that I can't stop talking about? I'll be honest, it is Columbus Crew season is starting back up again, and we're season ticket holders, and the first game is this month. And this family is heading into soccer mode. So if there are other soccer mode people out there, we're your people.
I've never been to a Crew game.
It's so fun. Oh my gosh, it's so fun. I highly recommend.
They just won, right? They won.
They did. So they're a terrific team. So it's always like more fun to watch teams win when they're doing really well. But honestly, it's just one of those like exciting, fun family things. And my kids are, you know, I have a boy and a girl, 11 and 15, very different, like an introvert, extrovert, artistic, athletic, like they're very different kids. And this is one thing that we can all do together and have a ball. And it's like not a compromise. It's not like we're going to mini golf and we're going to drag this child, or we're going to go do this and we're going to drag this child. It's something that we're all really on board for. And we have such a good time. So highly recommend for those families who have kids with different interests who want to find something fun to do.
All right. So Columbus bucket list is crew game, Gramercy, and kitties for people listening.
Oh, you can. I mean, that's a day. That's, you can't go wrong there.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me again. It was great talking to you.
Good to see you too.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms: Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with love.